Do you have that paper where you had started filling some things out?
Ooh, what did I do?
You
would
have to ask me that.
No.
We'll just ad lib it. How about that?
Sounds good to me.
Wait a minute. Maybe I can pull it back up. Sorry.
Oh, no. Gosh, no.
She'll tell you, I fly by the seat of my pants.
That's how I do things. All right. We got the bulletin.
Yeah.
I was looking for something.
Okay. I'm ready. Just
okay.
Whenever you are. I'm just in here. I'm looking for it. Goddammit, I had my piece of paper. Because I had rolled out. Anyway.
That's okay. So I think the first question is really just to get it like a sense of who you are, you know, your name, the various businesses that you run, maybe a little bit about your family, if you're comfortable sharing that
kind of stuff. Sure.
So.
Are we recording?
Yes. It's the easiest way for me to just get everything correct.
My name is Draco Miller, and I'm a native Brownwood, Woodian. Born and raised here, graduated from Brownwood High School in 1980.
Okay.
I worked at the state school for about 11 years, from 1980 to 91. Then I went to Kohler and worked there for 11 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days. Knew that that wasn't for me. Then went into the social field back there to MHMR for 10 years, and then started my business, the janitorial business, in 1993.
Okay.
And still doing it to this day.
Okay.
I'm married to Sonia, which she's a native of Memphis, Tennessee, but she's been here in Brownwood, and we have 3 beautiful grown children. You know, my last daughter just graduated December the 17th from Angelo State. Woo-hoo!
All right. That's great.
So there is emptiness there at the house. And like I said, currently own Draco's Janitorial and Auto Detailing. I'm also part owner in Midas Touch Production with my brothers, which is a company that brings in different types of bands in different cities.
Cool. And brings them here to Brownwood?
We bring them to Brownwood. We bring them to San Angelo, Abilene, San Antonio, Fort Worth, Dallas. We're everywhere. We do
That's
it
cool.
all. And we do everything from R&B, blues, rock and roll. We've done one country band, but then we do jazz.
That's
but for
cool.
the most part, it's R&B. And that's pretty much my work history and everything. I'm currently sitting on the board of directors of the appraisal district here in Brownwood.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, going into my 4th year, sit on the board of directors of MHMR, going mm-hmm. into my 9th year. As well as the mayor pro tem councilman for Ward 4 of Brownwood, and about to finish up our second term in 2018.
Okay.
And I'm the founder, and my brainchild is my organization called ROC,
mm-hmm.
and that's Revitalizing Our Community. And it's into its 5th year now, and we do various things as far as the city of Brownwood and the community of Brownwood. We've every year for 5 years we give scholarships to students at Brownwood High School, graduating students from Brownwood High School. And what we try to do, because my organization is made up of a rainbow coalition, it's not an all-black organization. We have black members, we have a Hispanic member, and we have white members. And I did that by design because that is the culture of Brownwood,
mm-hmm.
and we want to reach all ethnicities in all areas of Brownwood. And our scholarships are geared towards that way as well, to where we want to give scholarships to blacks, whites, Hispanic, and this first year, last year, we gave one to Asian.
Oh.
You know, so we covered most of the ethnicities there. We're a nonprofit organization, 501c3, and we are currently revitalizing Cecil Holmes Park.
Mm-hmm.
We've done revitalization at Benny Houston Community Center. We'd also engage into the National Night Out for 5 years. We do our Martin Luther King Parade every year during his birthday,
mm-hmm.
5 years. We do a soul food dinner. And our soul food dinner, we've been 5 years, but we've done it 3 out of the 5 years, and we're currently going to start back 2018 January, Martin Luther King's birthday. And what we'll do, we'll have the parade and everything, and then the ceremony at the plaza, and then we'll invite everybody back to Benny Houston Center for a soul food dinner.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
And is that they purchase plates and that goes to fund different things?
Yes, that goes to fund the different endeavors that we do, such as scholarships. We also help people, and if they, we had 3 recipients, they were sick. And we helped out with gas going back and forth to the hospitals. We also helped out with hotel stays for the family members while they were out of town. And so those funds goes towards that and basically our youth,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we like to cater to our youth, which is our future. You know, we do what we call Destination Dignity. We'll take them to different places. You know, we've taken them to Six Flags before. We've also taken them to a water park, as well as when the Harlem Globetrotters came to Brownwood, we'll take the youth there. But the youth that we pick to take, we also check with the principals at the junior high and the high school to make sure that their behavior and their grades and everything is up to par.
That's good.
And we're going to currently start offering computer classes down at Benny Houston Center.
Oh, great.
Thanks to Brownwood Regional Hospital's IT department, they've donated us several computers. Now, we already have 3 computers that's on site down there at the Benny Houston Community Center as well.
Okay.
We help do cleanup around Brownwood in the community. And one of the things that we stress is that even though I am an African-American guy that was predominantly raised in what back then was called the black community,
mm-hmm.
which I never liked that because the community is Brownwood.
Right.
And there's no segregation and there's no such thing as the black town, the white part of town and this. So I try to get away from that type of verbiage. We're instrumental in educating people on uniting a united front for all of us and making sure you understand. We also work with the courthouse,
mm-hmm.
you know, in helping people that get in trouble and, you know, sometimes they have to go and do community service,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so we help out in those areas as well, you know, and we're definitely politically connected as well because we want to make sure that the justice system is equal and the foot of the cross is level for us all.
Right.
You know, so we're working with Judge Sam Moss as well as Michael Murray, the DA, Alicia Byrd, Christina Moss, you know, working closely with them, you know, trying to help, you know, in some of those areas that are needed, that we can kind of reach those people and, you know, try to see where they are.
And what are some obstacles that you've worked to overcome with the justice system here?
We've come across a lot of obstacles as far as some racial barriers,
mm-hmm.
and those that, which is near and dear to my heart,
mm-hmm.
because like I said earlier, I've been here all my life and I've seen a lot of injustice as far as African American men and African American women. They would, and I'll boldly say this, you know, it seems that our 35th District Court hands down more time to minorities than they do to other races. And that's interesting to us because we have statistics that prove some of the same cases of the same thing. you know, where an African American would get 30 years and a Caucasian person would get a 10-year deferred adjudication probation. You know, and one of the things that we're trying to do is work with the DA, not in anger, not to, you know, we don't want a Ferguson here. We don't want anything that's happening in the big cities. One thing that I can say about Brownwood, we've come a long ways, but we still got a long ways to go as far as trying to bridge the gap as far as racial barriers. And I'm somewhat of a rebel and kind of speaks my mind. And, you know, my mom used to tell me all the time, boy, don't let your mouth overload your butt. But sometimes I do. But I'm a voice for those who can't speak. And it's an issue here. It's an issue as far as employment. Mm-hmm. It's an issue as far as education goes. And the social economic diversity that we have here is just not equal like it should be. And we all need to come together from, as the mayor said in his address, that one thing that he wanted to do, and he also said it at the Martin Luther King parade, that for himself, he was afraid to have dialogue, you know, and he was afraid because he didn't know. And he wants to know, he wants to have that dialogue, and he's taking the torch and running with it and asking everybody, let's have this dialogue. Let's stop sweeping it under the carpet. Yes, there is a problem here. And I was so happy and when the mayor brought that out, because it took a lot for him to say that.
Right.
As a man that is a representative of Brownwood, you know, to say, yes, we have issues here. And I'm willing to stand with these guys to say, let's work on that. And the only way you're going to work through it is you got to have good conversation. And you got to come to the table. You know, do you have room for me at your table?
Right.
And I heard a young man that was in foster care for many years. You know, he is now in a world-renowned gospel, for if you will, a gospel rapper. And his name is Diego Fuller. And it really touched me when he sung this song and he said, do you have room for me at the table? And he was so passionate about it and had so much energy about it. A lot of people thought, oh, it was just another rap song.
Right.
But if you actually listen to the words, no, it wasn't. It was his life, what he lived as a foster kid. You know, do you have room for me at your table?
Right.
Please. Let me sit down. I'm a person that can change. I'm just asking, do you have room for me at your table?
Right.
And I told him that I'm going to encompass that in a lot of my speaking engagement and telling people, do you have room at your table for me? Let's have dialogue. Let's talk about it. This is Black History Month. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they chose February as Black History Month. I have yet to get anybody from higher up, even I'm talking to people's senators, congressmen, DAs. One of my good friends, he's dead and gone now, which was Al Lipscomb. He was a city council member in the Metroplex area. You know, how did this come about? How did February become to be Black History Month? We've heard a lot of different things as kids when we was growing up that, well, it's because it's the shortest month of the year. You know what I'm saying? And that's the reason why they just give that. And then it came, another philosopher said, no, it was because there was a lot of things in histories that African-American done that just so happened in the month of February. Well, I began to start trying to do some research on that. Well, that wasn't all true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some things that happened there, but that happened every day. Mm-hmm. And I tell people all the time, okay, we will celebrate Black History Month, but you should celebrate that every day.
Right. Right.
If you're an African American, you celebrate that every day. First of all, you celebrate you being a human every day, because that's life. Mm-hmm. Now, do we need to get away from the verbiage of, you know, old Black History Month? You know, good friend of mine that I was raised with, white guy, slept in the bed with him, Coach West's son, Glenn West, who is a world-renowned coach down in Brenham now. Why they don't have White History Month, Taco? Mm. And it was kind of touching when he said that. So sometimes we can get caught up in our race to where we forget the human race. And that's where my footsteps is going towards, is to help people in Black History Month to say, yes, we celebrate Black History Month, but we should celebrate life every day.
Right.
You know, and in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, he saw this and he knew he wasn't going to come, but he knew one day that all of us would be able to join hands and walk down the street in harmony. You know what I'm saying? And live together peacefully. Be my neighbor. Mm-hmm. Not my next door neighbor, but my neighbor, because we live together.
Right. So. And just sort of going over that, let's see here. We've talked a little bit about number 7, about your actions in the community and trying to push past some of those barriers. And then having that open dialogue to help the community change hearts and minds. That's how we do it, through conversation and talking, getting to know each other.
Right.
What advice could you give to young people growing up? Maybe they haven't had the same experience that you've had growing up, but there's still an experience of non-equality or inequality that they're still experiencing.
And I'm glad you asked me that, Amanda, because me and my daughter was talking about that as she graduated, you know, from Angelo and going into the real world. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I told her, first, you are a woman. Mm-hmm. You're a human being that just so happened to be Black, mm-hmm. not by your choice. But be proud of who you are. You know what I'm saying? But not to be overzealous mm-hmm. about your ethnicity, because you have to stop and think. You didn't make that. It was given to you by God. Mm-hmm. And that the advice I give to young kids today when I talk to them, first off, it's got to start with you. If it doesn't start with you, how do you expect anybody else to respect you? Mm-hmm. And you got to respect yourself, and then respect your race. You know, let's not use the N word
right. And
say, oh, it's okay because we're Black, it's all right to use that.
Right.
My advice to you is that don't use that, because if a different race used that, then it draws tension. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like accidents will happen, but it can be prevented. Prevent this
right. And
love your fellow brother, mm-hmm. you know, because that is your neighbor. Mm-hmm. That is the person that you've got to see every day. And I use this a lot, and kind of getting a little spiritual here. How can you say you love God whom you've never seen, but hate your brother mm-hmm. that you see every day?
Yes.
Now that's, to me, that's one of the most powerfulest thing that I can tell anybody. A good friend of mine, you know, we get into a lot of debates. I don't want to say arguments. And in closing, I tell him, if you are spirit-fed and call yourself a Christian, how can you denounce another race that you see every day but profess to love God whom you've never seen?
Right.
So take that same faith and apply it to your fellow brother who you see every day. That is the advice that I give young people. You know, treat people like you want to be treated. Regardless of that, because we're all the same on the inside. Mm-hmm. We're going to bleed the same, and at the end of the day, we're all going to die the same.
That's very, very true.
So it has nothing to do with the color, the pigmentation of your skin. It's the character of a man or a woman that you are in building integrity. And I tell my children, my philosophy is integrity is always doing the right thing, even when nobody's looking.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is very, very true.
Yes.
I think a lot of people nowadays, they try to promote equality by attempting to be colorblind. And that creates its own issues, because then you sort of put away an entire culture and experiences, and so how do we move towards equality while still recognizing each other's cultures and differences and celebrating those instead of being colorblind?
I can sum that in a few words. Just be honest about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just be real about it. Don't be a hypocrite about it. You know, it goes back spiritually again. You know, are you going to be cold or hot or lukewarm?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't straddle that fence. You got to be one or the other. You know what I'm saying? There's challenges out there. You got to be real about that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be honest about it, but yet be compassionate about it, because there's one person out there that might really want that dialogue, but you come with a very aggressive attitude, you can shy that person away, and you've lost that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that one person could have captured a nation.
Right.
You know, so you have to be very careful who you entertain. You know, you have to be very careful of the things that you say, you know, and the things that you do. Because when you think people are not looking, they are looking. So when we come across adversities and things, you have to be able to be honest about it. You have to be able to actually talk about it and not sweep it under the carpet. You know, so it's a movement that is a continuous movement that I feel that we're going to continue to move forward with that. Nobody's born a bigot.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's born a racist.
Mm-hmm.
That is a learned behavior.
Right.
That is a taught behavior. So if you teach your children from day one, as we teach them when they're in the womb of their mother, you know, and you teach them that, because when that child comes out, he doesn't see color.
Right.
He doesn't know anything. You know, his or her brain is like a sponge,
mm-hmm.
and it absorbs everything. So what you're saying and teaching that person is what they're going to take out. You know, one kid sat up and said, oh, well, how did you learn that word? Well, I hear my dad say it all the time.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's just one, it's a thing that it's all educational.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to continue educating everybody, you know, to overlook racism. And there's a difference between being prejudiced,
mm-hmm.
and being a racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a racist is a person who controls a certain culture and a certain race. Prejudice is a wide spectrum of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can be prejudiced to the fact of not liking the color of your hair.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So people get that twisted. People get it while, you know, being prejudiced or being racist, they're the same things. No, it's not.
Right.
You know, we all, human beings, have some prejudice about us.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But it's when you take that prejudice and you explore it to the fact to where it's denouncing a different race,
mm-hmm.
then you become to be that racist, because you're trying to control that. And one thing that I can't, well, it gets up under my skin, because we see a lot of this too. You know, because of the finances of a person, the money that they have, we find that people think because I live in a bigger house, drive a better car, and I make more money, I'm better than that person who does not make that kind of money, or who doesn't live that way, or who doesn't drive that way. You know, and I tell people, money should not make a person. A person should make money,
mm-hmm.
but don't let it be driven to that fact. You know, so socially economic things, you know, plays a lot of part in, you know, a person being prejudiced or a person, you know, becoming to be a racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so those are the things that in Brownwood, in my conversation, when I talk to people all the time, I always try to throw things like that out there. And when I see those things, I call it like it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some like it, some don't.
Right.
You know, but it's okay.
And so tell me the importance of revitalizing the Benny Houston Center, revitalizing the park, and attending to the Rufus Hardin Museum, and getting those things built. Because a lot of people might say, well, if we want to have equality, let's just have this base of, you know, there's already a park you can go to, there's already this you can go to. Why revitalize these specific areas, and what is the importance of that?
Thank you. The importance of our organization revitalizing the Benny Houston Community Center, because that was the first thing that we started doing. I grew up on Cardell Street.
See,
we grew up in the projects, what we call, what they're named, George Smith Homes.
Okay.
And we played in Benny Houston, the Community Center, which then it was called Cardell Community Center. It wasn't called Benny Houston Community Center. It became to be Benny Houston Community Center because Benny Houston was the first African American city council. During the segregated times in the late 60s, early 70s, and he was the first one that was elected to that position. So when we formed this organization, we wanted to take the torch and to revitalize that community center, because we never had air conditioning and heating growing up in that community center. Mm-hmm. We never had a going into the kitchen to where you can cook for 500 people. You know, that building was just a building mm-hmm. that has just been sitting there, and it was deteriorating. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the city and spoke with the city council, and at that time it was Bobby Roundtree as the city manager, and said, hey, we need a facelift here. You know, we need to revitalize this center. You know, we got to have air conditioned heating in here. We got to do something with the floors. We got to do something with the restrooms. Paint it up. We got to make it look good. Simply because it is city owned mm-hmm. by the taxpayers of Brownwood, Texas, not the black community.
Right.
It's owned by the taxpayers of Brownwood community, and it's owned by the city. So this is the only recreational facility left that the city owns. Mm-hmm. So we had to preserve that, you know, not only because we grew up in it, because it's a product of Brownwood.
Right.
Going on to Cecil Holman's Park. Cecil Holman was a civic leader, but also an entrepreneur that came from Coleman with 50 cents in his pocket way back in the day and become to be the first black mortician in Brownwood.
Oh, wow.
You know, with the help of his white friends, mm-hmm. such as Mr. Morlock, had Morlock Funeral Home, and the late, great Mr. Groner Pitts that helped him out doing that. And he also had a grocery store, which was on Beaver Street. Beaver Street was known as a drug-infested area in 80s, early 90s. But during the 60s, the 50s, the 60s, and 70s, that was a thriving business, Beaver Street. We had barbershops. We had convenience store. We had a barbecue place. We had a pastry shop where a lady, Mama D, cooked sugar cookies and everything. There was thriving businesses down in that area. But when the older people died out and none of that generation came to be entrepreneurs to revitalize that, it was taken over by drugs. Mm-hmm. And it was always known as the Flats. Mm-hmm. So we changed that verbiage and got everything back. Operation Bighorn was the biggest drug bust that happened down there during that time. So they migrated to Cecil Holman's Park. And because the drugs and everything migrated from Beaver Street to Cecil Holman Park, that gave us another outlet to say, we must revitalize this. We have to give this a facelift. Our youth can't even come down here to play without seeing syringes, baggies, right. and different things like this here. So it had to take a group of people. You know, the city, not saying anything about the city, because during that time, that wasn't high on their list mm-hmm. because of the things that were going on. So it took the community, the people who lived in that community at that time, to say enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And so having revitalized in Benny Houston Center, having known what we did at Beaver Street and migrated to Cecil Holman's Park, That gave us the driving force to say, that's our next project. Because this is an eyesore. Mm-hmm. And it's a product of Brownwood. And when people come into Brownwood potentially thinking about moving here, living here, they travel the city.
Right.
They just don't travel one section of a city. And I'll say this here. An injustice on the south side of town is the same injustice on the north, east, and west if it happens in your community. We're not exempt from that.
Right.
You know? So therefore, race has no play in that. Mm-hmm. People do. Mm-hmm. Of all colors. So I said, Bobby, what are we going to do? These people who live down in this community deserve a better park. Mm-hmm. This youth deserve a better park. It's taxpayers' dollars that is collected by the city. Mm-hmm. So we need to put that money back so they can feel good about where they live.
Right.
And the children can feel good and say, we have a safe haven, a place that we can go and play now.
Right.
So that was our driving force with that. And fast forwarding to Rufus F. Harden Museum, which was an all-colored school.
Right.
Back during the day. That's what they called it. During the segregated times, where my mom, my dad, my uncles, my aunts, they graduated from Rufus F. Harden.
And it's still, if I'm understanding, it remained sort of a segregated school even when segregation was outlawed. Is that correct?
It was correct. That was true. And then it later become integrated to where I can remember Mr. Parson, and there was a couple other white gentlemen that attended there. Matter of fact, our assistant chief of police, James Fuller, attended school down when it was called, it wasn't called Harden then, it was a North, it was elementary, which was Principal Ellis at the time that was the principal there. My older brother Jody, his graduating class was the last class that actually came out of Harden. Didn't graduate from Harden, but that group of kids came out of Harden. That was the last one before they shut the doors. And then we had a lady by the name of Miss Carol Sue Spratt. And a lady by the name of Miss Willie Lee Gay. And my cousin Charles Lowe, who formed an organization called Unity. And Unity birthed Rufus F. Harden to where they wanted to revitalize that. Because Mr. Harden was a principal, which was a great principal, a great educator. And they wanted to preserve that as history. Because if history teaches us anything, you'll never know where you're going till you know where you come from.
Right.
So having said that, is the driving force of revitalizing that building. Because it's heritage, it's our history, our family came through there, not to the point, I had a good friend of mine to say, well, Dwarko, why would I donate to Rufus F. Harden? And I'm a white guy and I didn't go there. You know, I'm not black. And I said, see, that's where you need to be educated.
Right.
Because you're a human being first. And just because you are a human being, you ought to have passion to know that that was history. We preserve history as the people preserve their heritage as the rebel flag. You know, as they preserve the heritage as any other cultures. So it has nothing to do with black. It has to do, it's in your city.
Right.
And you want your city to have history. Because if not, why do we have the historic museum at the old jail?
Right. Right.
Because it tells us what happened back in the days.
Right.
And it shows kids when they go through there, wow, this is what happened back then. Man, I'm glad we didn't live back in these days.
Right.
You know, thank God that we came in this era. So we must understand that history is knowledge. And knowledge is power. And so having said that, trying to revitalize that building, it's been a chore. It's been a challenge. Fundamentally, without money, we couldn't get it done. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point to where there was some internal issues to where it's kind of at a standstill now. But we will finish that facility. And it will be open as a museum, a beautiful museum. And it will be a very well-landscaped facility to where people in Brownwood can be proud of. Mm-hmm. And not say, oh, well, that was a colored school right there. Say, that was a school in the time that served its purpose.
Right. And I think, like you said, you had the friend who's, he's white, who's, why would I donate to this mm-hmm. if I, it didn't affect me or my family or anything like that? And a lot of people maybe are they scared or embarrassed of history, mm-hmm. and so they're hesitant to preserve it, just because it was wrong.
And I'm glad you said that, Amanda, because that is very true. Being afraid to preserve that, because if you don't do it, it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. I don't have to think about it.
Right.
As a good friend of mine said again, the same guy, I am ashamed mm-hmm. of what my forefathers done. Mm-hmm. That's not who I am. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't live in the time of slavery. Mm-hmm. But my ancestors did. I didn't live in a time where I saw people being hung, being beat, being bit by dogs, being hosed down by fire hoses. I didn't live during that time, but my ancestors did. Mm-hmm. And because it was hurting to them, it's hurting to me to know that society was like that and that people was ruthless and just downright bad, mm-hmm. you know, and to treat people differently because the pigmentation of your skin.
Right.
Oh, boy, at the end of this world, man, it's going to be interesting.
Yes.
But it's a deal to where I want Brownwood to know that history is knowledge and it becomes to be power. And I want our city to stand out, as I said, to take the torch to say, we won't tolerate this anymore. Mm-hmm. Brownwood has always come together. When there's a tragic thing to happen to a certain family or to Brownwood, we pull together, we help. Mm-hmm. Why we can't do that all the time?
Right.
Why do we have to wait till something bad happen before we come together? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, and I'll say this here, spouses, they get into arguments. They don't talk to one another because they mad as hell at each other. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But then something happens in the family that has to make you talk.
Yes.
Why? It happens with me. I ask myself that. Why does it take something bad before you want to do something good?
Right.
Why we can't just do good all the time?
And, you know, talking about Cecil Holman Park, I heard an educator once give a really interesting story about, I don't know, some group of researchers took a nice car, and they parked it in what could be considered a dangerous neighborhood. Mm-hmm. They parked this nice car in the dangerous neighborhood, lock it, you know, this and that, mm-hmm. leave it, it's untouched. I mean, it remains untouched for several weeks. They take that same car, they remove it from the neighborhood, and they put a small crack in the windshield. And then they put that car right back where it was, with that one little crack in the windshield. And because of that one eyesore, within a day, the car was stripped. Tires gone, you know, this all this kind of stuff. And it's because it was deemed not as valuable. Mm. And so it was a target for crime. Mm-hmm. And so talking about the park, you know, people think, why do we have to fix up the park? It's already full of crime. But if the park was revitalized and looked like a nice park, mm-hmm. it's less likely to be a target for crime.
And that is so true. Mm-hmm. And that what you just said should be shouted around the world. Because if people will capture that statement that you said, we won't have any of these things in our neighborhoods.
Right.
Because if you think about what you just said, you go into a neighborhood and you see a lot of dilapidated houses, boarded up houses, you know in those areas is where high crime is going to be, where homeless people are going to invade, where these things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. They're not going to go into the affluent area, the well-to-do areas, other areas that are, cleaned mm-hmm. and vibrant.
Right.
So it's always, it goes back to the socioeconomic challenges that we go to. The disparities, the things that happen, and they say, well, you go across the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
When you go into any city you go to, and challenge me on this. Hey, man, where's a predominantly black neighborhood? Oh, across the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
If you go across those railroad tracks, you go right into it.
Right.
And then once you go across those railroad tracks, it's like going into a different city.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mimic the city. And that's what I want people to understand and realize about Brownwood. When people come into Brownwood, I want them to leave to say, it all looks the same.
Mm-hmm. Because the same taxes are coming out of the same areas.
That's right.
And so as a community, mm-hmm. we should all fix all the areas of the city.
All the areas. You're exactly right. And that was my plea to getting the buyback money for the $100,000 that the city gave us to help revitalize that deal.
Mm-hmm.
We must feel good about our community. And the people who live here must feel good about living here.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to understand that their dollars is just as valuable as the other man's dollar. So if you take in my dollars in taxation, why we can't get the infrastructure that we need down here?
Right.
We take this money and we pour it over here. Well, in educating African Americans, the best way I could tell them is, you want to make a change? You want to see a change? You got to be part of that change.
Right.
You have to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I use this word, don't talk about it. Be about it. Talk is cheap. You can talk about it all day long.
Right.
But be about it. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Take that step forward. Yes. You're going to have some obstacles. But you just keep jumping those hurdles and keep jumping those hurdles. And then when you look back, man, I've come this long way,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay. So we in Brownwood, we need not to have the attitude, oh, well, we don't need to worry about that over there. Yes, you do, because
mm-hmm.
it's still in your community.
Right.
Because crime on Good Shepherd is crime on Cordell,
mm-hmm.
because it happened within your city. And we talk about we're trying to attract people to move into Brownwood. How are we going to do that when people see that there is no unity?
Mm-hmm.
There's division, there's strife, there's envy, there's no productivity. Thanks, George. There's no productivity. There's no, hey, man, where's the brotherhood at?
Mm-hmm.
What happened here? I have a friend that lives in Atlanta, Georgia. Makes big money. Big money.
Must be nice.
Yeah, that's what I tell you. I mean, he makes big money. Actually considered a multimillionaire. But if you would meet this guy, you wouldn't think, as the old folks say, had a pot to piss in and a window to throw it out of. But he lives in an area that is socially challenged, that is not a vibrant area, that is an area where who would ever thought a man that's worth $40 million live in a place like this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he grew up poor. And he never forgot where he come from. And he made money. But he took his money and he's revitalizing the community and where he lives.
Right.
To where people can say, man, this guy, why would he build a $2 million house in an area where there's $30,000, $40,000 homes.
Mm-hmm.
Changing the perception of people.
Mm-hmm.
Once you change that perception, then everybody's going to get on board. And then put your money where your mouth is, mm-hmm. so to speak. And that's what he did. He put his money where his mouth is. For an example, Tyler Perry. Same exact mm-hmm. scenario. Lived in his car for days in and days out. Knew he was a filmmaker. Knew that he had this here. But they wouldn't give him an opportunity mm-hmm. because he was a black man. It's unheard of. You don't have that kind of talent.
Right.
But he never stopped. And he kept plowing. And he was angry, which drove him to do what he did. He channeled his anger not into looting and rioting and doing all of that stuff. He changed that into productive things.
Right.
To where he's very well known now. And people is like, wow, we didn't know that he was going to become to be that. Well, you would have known had you been a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to become to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to see a change, get into the areas that need to be changed and help it change.
And so how can the community just support, donate rock, and get moving on the hardest Rufus Hardin?
Hard. Good question.
Is there a website or?
There is a website for Rufus F. Hardin. We have on Facebook for rock
mm-hmm.
that you can contact us on rock, or I can be found anywhere. You can go to City Hall, go to, you know, ask anybody on the street, hey, y'all seen Draco? You know, but you can contact us and we can direct you in the area, like with the Cecil Holman Park Project. You know, we got brick pavers that you can buy for $75 mm-hmm. that you can engrave names or whoever you want to put on that. Then we have 18x18 granite slabs that you can purchase for $200. And those were going to be placed in what we're now calling Rock Honors, which is ROC, Revitalizing Our Community, Honors.
Mm-hmm.
All the people who help revitalize this park. And those are going to be the brick pavers that's going to be inlaid into the ground in a beautiful column. It's going to be beautiful. And as you can drive down there, you will see those columns look like the Twin Towers
mm-hmm.
that are put up. And now we're waiting for the guys to finish doing the engraving so we can lay those in there.
And there's still time to purchase these slabs.
There's a lot of times to purchase those slabs and everything. We don't have, people ask, do you have a time frame when you want it done?
Mm-hmm.
No, because this is continuous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to continue doing this here. Whether it be at Cecil Holman Park, whether it be at Wiggins Park, whether it be at Alcorns Park, whether it be at Fabus Park, the parks is a vital part of our community because it's quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for our youth as well as the adult. Because a lot of times, I'll just go to Riverside Park and sit and just watch the ducks. It's relaxing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll go to Coggin Park and just walk to see the scenery. I visit all spectrums of Brownwood. Because I live here and mm-hmm. I want to know about it. And I'm a city councilman and I should know about it. If somebody asks me, hey, what's going on this side of town? Regardless whether it's not my ward or not, mm-hmm. I should know about that. And I should be involved in that because it's my community. So, and Rufus F. Hardin, you can contact myself or Hank Hunter.
Okay.
Hank is the president and he's an awesome man. Let me tell you, and he's also a historian. He's a history teacher, a history buff.
Okay.
You know, and just as smart as I don't know what. But he has helped us with that project down there. And he's not black.
Really?
And I said that jokingly because he got on board.
Mm-hmm.
He saw the vision.
Mm-hmm.
He understood. This is history. This is not color. This is history. a lot of doctors, lawyers, chiropractors, engineers, business owners, entrepreneurs was birthed out of that building.
Right.
Now they don't live here anymore,
mm-hmm.
but they were birthed out of that building.
Mm-hmm.
Come to be productive people, valued human beings in this life, and they've given back. Not enough, because we ain't finished the project yet.
Right. You can do a little more.
But we can do a little more. But yes, there's time.
Okay.
You can still help in revitalizing that, Rufus F. Harden, and revitalizing Cecil Holmes Park. And we have multitudes of other projects that we're going to undertake. But, you know, we take baby steps with them. You know, because, you know what? People love to give.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you just don't want to keep beating them over the head and beating them over the head.
Yes. And I'm glad that you said that about, is it Hank Henry? Is that who you said?
Hank Hunter.
Thank uh-huh. you. And because I think there's a portion of the community that's afraid to get involved because they're white and they might think, oh, we're not welcome there. Maybe they're mad at us or have these preconceived notions, you know, mm-hmm. There's this anger or something like that.
I'm glad you said that because it wasn't an all-black committee at first.
Mm-hmm.
But then it got to the point to where my cousin Charles Lord would come to be the president and Adelia Kirk, she was the president, past president. And they knew then at that point, we as African Americans can't do this by ourselves. And we can't be selfish to the fact to where we won't go out or too proud
mm-hmm.
to go out and ask for help from our fellow brothers, our neighbors,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a Hispanic or white.
Mm-hmm.
And now the board is made up predominantly white. Interesting.
It is.
You know, we had Guy Andrews, our economic development guy,
mm-hmm.
Hank Hunter, Ray Tipton, James Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
Those are four board members. They're not black. They're all white.
And Hank Hunter. That's good. That shows an opportunity for all of us to get involved.
Opportunity for all of us to get involved and to let people know, no, this ain't a color thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a history thing.
Yes.
So, that's
good. Well, this has been just a really great talk, and let me make sure I've gotten over pretty much all of the... I mean, I think we've really covered a lot here.
Yes.
And, of course, if you think of something, just give me a call or email me or text me or something like that.
Yeah, I got your phone. You